Welcome to ShollyCast, the podcast all about Lolly and Shota, including Not Safe for Work. ShollyCast is hosted by me, Hydro, and Dr. X. We're the developers of Insexual Awakening, a straight Shota visual novel game with incest, lollies, MILFs, onesans, and even a femboy character if you play Insexual Awakening 2, our sequel. If you'd like to play our games, you can download them at our official Barag at barag.net/cyberhex. And if you'd like to support Insexual Awakening's continued development and this podcast, you can join our Subscribestar at subscribestar.adult/cyberhex. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to ShollyCast, everybody. Once again, my name is Hydro. I'm with my co-host, Dr. X, and for this episode, we are joined by Hentai Stone. Welcome, Hentai Stone.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome.
Tell us a bit about yourself. So you're actually a mixture of a lot of things. So you are doing voice acting, you're also doing drawing, and you write stories. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, I am a voice actress, a little bit of a streamer, and a writer.
Nice. So you got the whole trifecta going on there. And the voice acting thing was a fairly recent thing, correct? Like that's a fairly like new thing that you kind of dived into?
Embarrassingly, yes. That was very recent. I actually started like last year, sometime in October, I believe. I could be wrong.
So what inspired you to start voice acting?
It's a bit of a long story, but I'll make sure to shorten it a bit. But basically, what happened was, like, I hired a voice actress to voice one of my, to voice a Sona character that I had called Stony, for my account, Hentai Stone. So I pretty much had the voice lines, but then I realized I needed a second voice actor at the time. And I was like, gee, how am I supposed to do this? And a little voice in my head said, you should do the voice acting yourself. Yeah, and I was like, well, okay, fine, I guess. And if nobody likes it, I could just edit it and hire somebody else's voice for the interviewer. And pretty much, I still get comments to this day after I did that, the people absolutely enjoying that particular interviewer. Once I did that, I pretty much, I was actually in a voice call at one point, and someone said, hey, you should really do some voice acting. And the rest is history at that point. I pretty much said, okay, I'll dub a couple comics, see if it works out. And if nobody likes it, I'll stop doing it. Little did I know, everybody loves me, apparently.
So what kind of comics or like characters have you voiced so far, in addition to what you already mentioned?
Pretty much anything that I believe would fit my voice. I haven't done a lot of known characters yet, because I don't want to voice a character that I believe would not fit how the character sounds. If an artist that I'm voicing a comic for believes that I can pull off a good voice for one of their other comics, I just shrug and go, okay, I'll voice it for you if you believe I fit.
I think one of the comics that you've dubbed so far is one, a straight Shota comic with Shota and like a woman, like a furry woman, furry like wolf antler woman. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. It is one of my favorite comic dubs I've ever done, and one of the biggest projects I've actually done and finished that I published on Barag. I'm absolutely proud of it. And the person that I've worked with, I believe Lazar Core was, I can't remember their original name, but I worked with them to do the recording for the Shota, and yeah, I was absolutely in love with the project after it was done, and it's one of my second most popular posts that I've done on Barag.
Oh, what's your most popular?
Hilariously enough, it was a silly comic dub for Washed Toasty.
Oh, and what was the comic like?
Basically, if I recall correctly, you know that Lolly or Shota character that the Catholic Church is performing?
Oh yes, yep.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, pretty much it was the character was descending from the heavens in front of this OC and the OC pretty much fucked them. And I gave the Lolly character pretty much a silly voice.
Oh my god, it's so big!
And it's one of my most popular posts that I ever done. Probably because of how silly I made it.
I do remember that one. That one is funny. I did enjoy that, yes.
I hope you would know that. You boosted it and made it more popular.
Yeah. No, I do remember it. Yeah, but I do remember that being a very fun post. And hopefully the boosting did help it get more popular. Because, you know, with voice acting, when you decide upon, like, what kind of project you're going to do, it's interesting that you mentioned how you like to voice characters that only you feel that you could match your voice to. Because, you know, sometimes in voice acting, you know, certain voice actors have to kind of push their limits, and sometimes they want that in order to, like, voice something totally different. But on the other hand, I can also understand when a voice actor is like, well, I'd rather voice characters that are more, I feel like I could really naturally pull off, or a character that I know really matches, like, the style that I'm going for. Is that kind of how the approach you would take, you'd say, with characters that you voice?
I believe that you put it in the best way possible, probably better than I could ever word it, because, like, I love voice acting so much. I love the art of it. But if I feel like my voice doesn't fit that character, I do not believe I should do it. Because, like, let's take another character, for example. Let's go with Anya. I cannot voice that character for the life of me, let alone do that well enough where I would feel like, okay, this is up to par with my quality of the voice acting I've done.
Makes sense. Like, there's certainly all different kinds of voices and all different kinds of characters that I think but the nice part is that, because, you know, voice acting in the Lolly Show community, it is pretty in demand. So especially, I think, for characters that are either onesans or might be older characters as well, that those are in demand. So, and there's so many different, like, OCs and so many different characters that there's a lot of different potential out there to voice different characters. Kind of like when you were voicing the characters for the In Sexual Awakening stream. So, you know, you're able to just kind of freely do them however you want, because those characters don't yet have, like, an identifiable a voice. Like, everybody, like, you know how you kind of create your own voice for a character in your mind sometimes when you're reading a character in a doujin or in a comic? Have you ever had that happen before?
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. Like, without hesitation, I definitely do. I have a little voice actor in my head that, like, kind of plays a voice that I believe would fit it.
So how did you get into Lolly and Shota in the first place?
Oh, that is a long and boring story, but I'll keep it interesting. Pretty much, I was a porn connoisseur when I was 16, and I absolutely loved looking up all kinds of new pictures that artists would make here and there. Like, there's so much porn. I love it.
I know, it's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. But one day, while I was looking up a particular website, looking up Amy Rose hentai, don't ask why, but I happened to stumble upon a manga that I actually just rediscovered recently, thanks to my very first stream, thank God, called Boys Empire. It was a 6-book doujin, or manga, I should probably say, that basically first started off with, like, a boy and a girl artist. Well, the girl was the artist, and they pretty much experimented with each other. And it kind of spiraled out to the point where the main Shota character married the girl artist. And I was absolutely fascinated with the concept of a younger character being in pornography. And it got me more curious to the point where I was trying to figure out, okay, so younger characters exist now that can exist in porn. And it just spiraled down to a point where I discovered the terms Lolly and Shota.
When you say that you found out that, you know, younger characters can be in like NSFW stuff, when you think about it, yeah, that does expand like the amount of stuff you can look up by a huge degree, right? Because mm-hmm. there's so many different like Lolly characters, Shota characters that are out there that you figured, oh, you know, they were in this anime, or they were in this Disney show, or they're this Nickelodeon show or Cartoon Network or whatever amount of shows they might have been in, or movies. And suddenly you're like, holy cow, they've expanded over to this realm. Porn. I mean, that this is amazing. Now I can look up all kind. I don't have any limitations at all. There were no limits ever.
You captured it perfectly. Yes, that's absolutely correct. Like at first, I thought that there were characters that were off limits. Like you couldn't touch those at all. But once I went deeper into like the hentai hole, I was like, Oh boy, I'm so excited. Like this opens a whole realm of possibilities with younger characters that I actually do have interests in, but thought that couldn't have porn.
And what's even more interesting about it is now it's like you now go into a realm of where the characters are so young that they're discovering the stuff, and it becomes like more experimental, and that they don't even know like maybe what to do first, and it lends itself to a lot more unique storytelling. And I think that's probably a big appeal to a lot of people with Lolly and Shota artwork and stories.
That's right. There's a lot more potential for like different dynamic characters. Like, for example, my Sona Stony, which I've written most of the stories for, like she gets into mischief mostly through sex, and it gets out of them also through sex. And I don't know about that, but humors me that like there can be characters like that in hentai and such.
Excuse me, I got into this trouble with sex. What if I got out of this trouble with sex? Yeah. Now, when you came up with your OC, was that shortly after discovering like all like the Lolly Show stuff, or was this something that kind of developed a bit afterward?
Actually, it did happen a lot later after I discovered Lolly. I'd be happy to explain the whole story. It's actually kind of fun for me to retell it.
Oh yeah, of course. We want to hear.
All right. Well, this was during the days where I first, when I was on Kik. That's K-I-K, which was a chatting app that you could use to talk with other people online and such. Lost my account on that though, unfortunately, but I pretty much knew an artist back then on Kik, and we just talked to each other, exchanged pictures and whatnot. And one day he was like, hey, I want to draw your Sona. Can I draw for you? And at the time, I didn't have a fursona at the time. And I was like, oh, no, I don't have one. And they're like, oh, can I draw you one? And I was like, oh, sure. How does this work? What am I supposed to do? Do I sign anything? And they're like, oh, no, just give me your favorite animal, your favorite color, and yeah, we'll do that. So I was not transitioning at the time, but I did love pink. And I had an ex that told me that I represented a lot of a red panda. So I basically gave him those two things, and a week passed, and I got pretty much a prototype version of Stony. She looked a lot more cat-like than she does now, which is ironic because people keep mistaking her for a cat.
So well, what kind of mischief has your fursona gone into so far?
So far what I have published right now is that she revisited her parents after she was disowned by them as an adult, but I'm pretty sure we want to hear more about the cub stuff. She pretty much, how it happened was after she got disowned by her parents, she pretty much discovered a brothel, and she met the brothel owner just outside while begging for money because she was completely drained at the time. And one thing led to another, and she started working at the brothel as a cub, although she had to lie about her age at the time due to the universe I made for her. And yeah, she pretty much got into a lot of mischief since then. I've written the story, the first part of that story, where she meets Via, the owner, And there's also the audio drama that I mentioned earlier where Stoney was interviewed and talks about her past. As for other stories, I'll have to double check because since I last looked at it, I've mostly been writing other stuff for the future.
So can people find these stories you mentioned on Barag?
Sadly, the stories are a little too long to be on Barag, but you can find it on, it's not After the Fallen, it's Archive Arar. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're also found on my Ink Bunny as well, but I would recommend going to Archive on our own because, like, on Ink Bunny, the Cub stories are locked behind requiring an account. Yeah. Well, Archive on our own doesn't really need that, so you can read that freely on there.
How long have you been writing?
How long have I been writing? That is the best question I've been asked all day. I do not know, but I've been writing stuff for a long time, almost my entire life. I guess it started mostly around high school thinking about it because, like, I had to write a bunch of, like, stories for creative writing purposes. And that's where my passion really started. But it became more of a passion when I started writing for my Sona.
That's pretty much when I started, was in high school as well. But, like, it was like a creative writing assignment, like, just as part of the school. Were there any books that also, like, influenced you being interested in writing stories as well? I know for me, I think it was To Kill a Mockingbird actually ended up being like one of like the catalyst books that really made me be like, wow, books aren't complete garbage.
Hilariously enough, I don't read a lot of books. If anything, my significant other does most of the reading and I just get like offhanded information about the book itself. However, during my high school, I have read a lot of fan fiction, and that's kind of what inspired me a lot when it comes to writing. That, the fact that like somebody sat down to write a story about one of their favorite fandoms was like new to me at the time. And I've read so much fan fiction, like I wish it was funny.
I mean, I don't really read books too much either. So, you know, I know that might be surprising to some people considering how much I write for IA and IA2, but most of my reading or most how I learned to write came from a few books and then mostly just, I think, playing video games, watching movies and reading like manga and comics and stuff, funny enough.
Oh man, I wish I thought of that. I just type it down and just roll with it. I'm pretty sure my writing is pretty bland looking at it, but I do my best. I just type down what I like and what I would like to read because in the end, when I'm writing, I'm mostly writing it for myself.
And that's important to be able to write for yourself because you have to be passionate about it to begin with. And that's probably why you got more into it once you started writing stories for your OC, because you felt very attached to her and, you know, her journey, right? Like her stories. And then after that, you kind of branched out and tried other things. I think that's important, though, is you really have to really enjoy what you're writing.
That's absolutely correct. Because, I mean, after all, like, if nobody else is going to read it, I may as well read it. Like, I might as well write something that I'm actually going to enjoy reading.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So you said that you read a lot of fan fiction. Like, what kind of fandoms were you, like, most interested in reading fan fiction for?
Let's see here. Back then, that had to be My Little Pony, Sonic the Hedgehog. I think a little bit of... There was a third one. I can't not remember for the life of me at the moment. But I'm pretty sure it'll come back eventually. But those were the main two, I can tell you right now. I remember very fondly reading a Amy Rose Learns to Drive fan fiction. Okay, yeah, I really like her, I'll admit it. But I really liked it because like it was safe for work, yes, but just the way it was written was absolutely fun to like peruse through.
So was that like a comedy one?
Yes, I can safely say it was a comedy one because like Amy was learning to drive at the time. So Shadow the Hedgehog was pretty much like sister in a car and it's like, okay.
Okay, Amy, you need to follow the traffic signals, Amy.
and she doesn't do a very good job, but she eventually gets her own car at the end, which she excitedly takes Shadow into the car again, putting him through the entire ordeal again.
I think I can understand why you probably liked that story, because it sounds like something that actually would have happened in the Sonic universe at some point.
Honestly, yeah. Thinking about it, yeah.
I mean, how fast can Amy move? I know she's probably not as fast as Sonic, but it seems like she can move pretty fast based on the games. I could be wrong about that.
If I have to be honest, she's not the fastest, but I know that she can keep up with the crew.
Well, she's got like a huge hammer, though, right? I mean, she could. That's kind of where she gets some of her momentum from, is like she slams her hammer on the ground, then flips in the air, and she like goes flying, at least from what I remember in Sonic Adventure, anyway.
Could she do that instead of driving a car?
Probably, although this was a fan fiction, so like anything can happen in a fan fiction.
It's like modern AU fan fiction. All the characters work at like a coffee shop or something for some reason. I've seen a lot of those.
There's so many AUs out there. Like, I cannot keep track of them.
Are there any that stuck out for you that you particularly like?
Fan fiction wise?
Yeah, for AUs.
Oh, not in particularly, no. I kind of tried to stay away from them because like I'm not that fully acknowledged on that. Hell, like, I think the biggest thing that I AUs, which I'm now remembering the third fandom now, Undertale.
Oh, of course. Yep.
Look, Goat Mom, hot as fuck.
I won't deny that. I do love her. She's great.
I hope you don't deny that. but yeah, there's a lot of AUs in the Undertale fandom. If I have to. But I didn't look into them that much because, like, I wasn't that acknowledged on that. But I think the most biggest one I had to say were, like, the swapped AU, where, like, characters would swap places. Like, for example, Azrael swapped with Toriel, Sans swapped with Papyrus, pretty much that.
Interesting. Would you say that when you're reading fan fictions of these different fandoms, Sonic, Undertale, My Little Pony, would you say that the ones that you like the most are the ones that stay pretty much in line with the characters' personalities and kind of their, not their backstory, but more like, how could I say, like, in other words, it seemed like it would be feasible that this would happen to them? Or are you actually kind of like, no, I mean, I could totally see Shadow being like, kind of like more of a timid dude, or, you know, like their personality being shifted.
That's the best part about fan fiction that I discovered. Like, it could pretty much be whatever the hell the writer wants. You could have a timid Shadow. You could have an Amy that is driving a car or learning to drive a car the first time. There's a lot that can be done. Granted, my favorites, I would say, have to be the ones where the character is as close to the original as possible.
Yep.
Because, like, of course I want to see my character be themselves, like...
Because that's why you liked them in the first place.
Yeah, pretty much, exactly.
There was that Sonic game where all the characters... It was a racing game, remember? It was a Sonic race. They might have had more than one, actually. I don't know.
I think it was All-Star Racing. I think they're making a sequel, or they did come out with a sequel or something.
It's quite funny to me to think about, considering so many of the characters are really fast. Obviously, Sonic and Shadow, but in this game, they're driving.
If you want to go even further, Sonic R was the first one that presented Amy Rose in a car herself.
Oh yeah, Sonic R. That's that weird racing, that obscure racing game for what, the Sega Saturn, or something.
Ironically enough, yes, bad racing game, great game for hide and seek.
Oh, there was a hide and seek mode.
No, there was a tagging mode, though, where you had to bump into the character and tag them. But, like, you could do that in multiplayer. So, like, the person that has to be tagged will hide in a spot and turn the camera over where, like, they don't see where they are. And the second player's like, okay, you gotta find me.
I like that. I'm surprised they didn't put that into, like, the Sonic Team Racing one. That would have been a lot of fun.
with the way the maps were built in Sonic R, I think that was the best place to have a mode like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
You seem to be a big fan of Amy Rose. Like, what are the things, some of the things you like about the character? Why do you think you like the character so much?
Guilty as charged. Yeah, she was the very first character I had a childhood crush on, and I was so enamored by her. And she was the first character I actually went the furthest in my first Sonic game I ever played, Sonic Advance. And I don't know, I just fell in love with the idea of like this pink hedgehog compared to like the brash Sonic character. I mean, back then she was super like because like she was obsessed with Sonic back then. But I absolutely love the way that they're treating her character now, because like she's an actual character now, and she has a personality, and I absolutely adore her.
I know there was that show, I think was called Sonic Boom. Did you watch it? And if so, what did you think about Amy in that show?
Oh my God, you had to mention Sonic Boom. I'm going to talk your ear off on this one. I believe, in my personal opinion, that is the best representation of who Amy Rose is. Like, the voice actress did an amazing job pushing towards having Amy's character be just like she was in the show. And she is an absolute delight to watch, because like she still has that crush on Sonic, but like it's not that obvious, and she kind of like tries to keep it a secret in a way. And I don't know, just having that little change and having her expanded a bit more was like very opening to a lot of people who didn't like Amy Rose at first, but saw Sonic Boom Amy Rose and was like, oh, okay, this character is actually kind of decent. So to answer your question, that is the best representation of Amy Rose in my personal opinion.
Awesome. And so did you think the show was good in general?
Good in general. I think that's putting it very lightly. I think it was amazing, especially in the later seasons. The writers did a fantastic job with what they had. And the voice actors had so much fun playing the characters. Like you could feel like the fun that they were having oozing out when you watched each episode.
And it feels like the Sonic series is very popular among lolicons and shotokans and people who like Cub, because you have characters like Tails, Cream, and of course those characters can also interact with the older characters as well. So I feel like there's lots of synergy.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I didn't think this conversation would go to this point. Like, this is awesome. like, Cub is kind of underappreciated when it comes to the Lolly Show fandom, because, like, they're technically lollies and shotas in a way. They're just furrier.
Yep.
Like, there's a lot of potential to put these characters in different situations. Like, you could put them in a school. You could put them in an apocalyptic universe. You could put them
like
in,
the comics.
Like, yeah, oh,
the comics were like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, weren't they darker than the games?
Oh yeah, but like I personally wish they would make an anime or an adaptation of the comics, minus the Ken Penders drama stuff that happened from it. But the when it was at its peak, that's one thing I was super passionate about with the Sonic universe were the comics when they had came out. I had read it from issues like 20, like issue 20 to issue like 60, which was like the super peak time to read the comics, because it was super gritty and dark, but the characters were great. You had Princess Sally Acorn, which she's never been depicted outside of, you know, a few animated shows from the 90s and the comics, which is really disappointing because I really like her character a lot. And it was just awesome. Oh, and Bunny Rabbit, too. So sad that she's not around in like any of the shows or anything. That I was super passionate about. Did you ever read any of the comics?
I'm actually looking at my shelf right now. I have the collection of the first three collections of the original Sonic Archie comics.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So you probably did read the same ones I did. Yeah, it was pretty dark, Dr. X, because there even was a whole arc where Princess Sally, or sorry, a Sonic is framed for murder.
Mm-hmm.
for killing Princess Sally, and it was really, really dark, but it was awesome. Man, was it fucking great at that time. Oh man.
Ironically, these characters are best when they're put into like darker situations for some reason. I don't know, but hey, if it works, I ain't gonna bash it.
I guess it just like it allows them to like grow a little more, like show more of their other sides of their character, I guess, as opposed to something like a really simplistic premise or scenario, in which you wouldn't see as much depth, I guess.
Absolutely, that is absolutely correct.
I had always thought that with Sonic's character, especially in the comics, and actually even like maybe some of the animated shows did address this, and I just never had watched them, but I always thought it would have been a very interesting character development for Sonic would have been, you know, because Sonic is kind of brash and kind of does things on his own, and how he needed to take more of a leadership role and kind of holding himself accountable for what he would do. And I always liked that kind of that concept of Sonic, you know, being like, oh, well, cool, man, fast thing live, I'll take care of it. And then he like fucks up and it causes either, you know, turmoil or problems with the other characters. And he has to learn like to be a leader. I always thought that would have been a great way to evolve, to put some depth to Sonic's character in a particular setting or universe, because there's so many different universes to Sonic the Hedgehog. It's kind of like almost like Marvel Comics in a way, where there's so many reboots and so many different shows. But the difference is that they do always seem to keep Sonic like consistent and all the characters consistent, whereas with Marvel Comics, they'll reboot characters to be completely different from what they used to be, and then you're like, okay, where do I start with these characters?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, like, entirely. Like, don't get me wrong, Marvel and DC make some pretty nice comics, especially nowadays, but when it comes to like Sonic characters, like, Sega is pretty strict on how the characters should act and be represented, so that's why we have such consistency with the characters. At least that's what I think. I don't know.
Yeah, and to go back to something we were talking about before, I feel like I'd love to see more interaction between the Lolly Show communities and the Cub communities, because I feel like
there is
a lot of overlap, but it kind of feels a little separated in practice in terms of like people interacting with each other. So I'd love to see like more interaction with each other, and it's always great to have people who are into Cub on the podcast, such as yourself. Because like it shows like another side of the Law Show fandom, because I do consider Cub to be underneath that,
yeah, under the same umbrella,
right? Because as you said, Cub is basically just furry Law Show.
That is absolutely correct. Like, there's a lot of potential for like character interactions and like viewpoints if you kind of mix Lolly and Shota with Cub, because like you could go down the route like it's a race thing and whatnot, but like you could instead go like, oh, this person is like a bit furrier than me, but like I still would like to be their friend, for an example, or like I'd like to fuck them.
I was just about to say, like, how amazing would it be to get like, oh man, I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if there was like, because I don't think this exists, if there was like a video game that mixed both human Lolly and Shota and Cub too. That, man, that'd be amazing. Even if it was like a safer work game, it would just generate so much fan art. And you know, sometimes it takes something like that, either a video game or a movie or something, to bridge the gap, so to speak. Because like what we were talking about was, that's probably why Undertale kind of sort of almost did that a little bit, because there were definitely like anthro characters along with human characters, and that's probably part of the appeal as to why a lot of people like it. Though in that case, it's only one human character, it's not like a multitude of human characters in that.
Well, they're technically at least a couple for the first game, because there's Frisk and Tara. And you're totally right that Undertale was a game that kind of helped bridge the gap, because I was reminded of these fan art pieces of Azrael, like Cub Azrael, I think.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
With Chara as a lolly.
Oh my god, yeah.
And them fucking each other and stuff. It was great. And that is a prime example of what Hydra was just talking about, with having cubs and lollies and shotas interacting with each other. Also, another one would be Made in Abyss. That's definitely one as well.
Yep.
I love Made in Abyss so much. Like, yeah, it's dark at a lot of times, but like, oh my god, I fucking love the characters so much. Like, god, oh my god.
They are fantastic characters, and you're exactly right. It's like, it's one of those funny things where sometimes a show or a game will come along that'll be so, well, first of all, it's got to be super popular. So, I mean, it's got to be a good show, of course. Okay. And then it's kind of like, I picture like the Cub Lolly show and the Human Lolly show as like two separate islands, but they're super close together. Like, they're not that far from each other. So all they need is just a little bridge that they can walk across. And usually sometimes you need multiple bridges to connect them together. And all that it would take would be like a super popular anime or a super popular video game. And suddenly they're crossing the bridge and they suddenly get it. There's like, oh my God, I love these. Like, I love Nanachi. Like Nanachi's great in Made in Abyss. Nanachi has no gender, so no gender confirmed. But it's a great character because all the fan art can depict Nanachi as any can be having a penis or having a pussy, having
yeah.
either.
Yeah, that's really awesome. That's another thing why I love Made in Abyss. There's so much beautiful, sexy art out there that like can depict like the characters that look like different genders. Like, oh my god, can we have more of that, please?
And the creator likes all that stuff, which is based. Amazingly based.
Yes,
and yeah. That's why I appreciate them so much. And they even, I remember they even followed Orenji when Orenji had done that meme of the smug lolly thing of the anatomy really? Of a gamer. Yeah,
the creator of Made of This has like an immense aura, a powerful aura.
Yeah.
Being so unabashedly into the lewd stuff for his characters, I think, is just very, it's very powerful feeling.
Well, if I didn't love Made in Abyss miss that much, I love it even more now.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh my god, that's awesome.
And there's horny stuff in Made in Abyss, isn't there?
Oh my god, there's mm-hmm. a lot. I mean, I think in season one or season, I forget if it's season one or season two, but at the very last episode, like one of the last parts, you have the two main characters are in like a pool, or they're kind of like bathing, and like literally like the main female character is just kind of like, is that your penis? Well, let me look at it. I'm just like, that this is great. It's like the best reward I can get after watching the whole season.
Yes. More of that, please. I will buy your product now.
More of that in other animes as well. Other animes and manga, that would be great.
God, yes. Can you imagine, like, other animes doing that? Like, God, please.
I'm trying to think of what would be, like what's an anime or manga that would really benefit from that?
That would benefit from it? You mean the interaction of, like, Cub and Human?
Or just Loli Show stuff in general.
Ooh.
I think it would be great if they had more of that in My Hero Academia.
Oh, yes, you're right, yes.
I'll throw my hat into the ring and add Monster Mazoom in there, because that desperately needs, like, more interesting characters.
Yes. Monster Mazoom actually, I think, would be even better if it did have Lolly and Shoten stuff, mm-hmm. and also if they had Anthro characters, too, because Monster Mazoom is mostly just Monster Girls, which, look, nothing wrong with Monster Girls. I love them. They're great, but I'm sorry, my anime list or these manga sites, Anthro is different than Monster Girl. They're not the same category. So stop slapping them together.
Yeah, and it's different from Kimono Mimi, because like these sites will have like an Anthro tag and it's just Kimono Mimi stuff, and I'm like, seriously, come on.
Yep. It's not just Monster Girl, yeah.
I thought that was obvious, like the difference between the two. Like, people mix that up.
Yeah.
Yes, they do, and it's pretty annoying. Like I remember Dr. X and I, we're still desperately looking for this. We have yet to find any like, okay, they exist in hentai, yes, but they're usually one-offs, they're one-shots, they're not, you know, they're not multi, they're not like a seinen or a shonen, where it's female anthro romancing male human. Doesn't exist. And I remember Dr. X and I were just kind of like, well, why don't we like look for it on Google or type it in or whatever? And we're just like, and we just type it in, and what comes up are people just kind of like, just watch this show, Monster Musume. I'm like, no, that is not anthro. Because people were saying like, oh yeah, these are anthro. Well, they kind of are. And I'm just like, wow, this is useless. So yeah, I was very, yielded no fruit, sadly. And that's the reason why, like, I've really badly wanted to make, you know, either a manga, like, this is more of like a pipe dream kind of thing, but I totally would get like a Japanese artist to draw like a manga like that and be like, all right, we're going to get it in Shonen Jump, and then it'll become popular, and then it'll become the anime, and then
that's
there.
The dream, huh?
Oh God, I would love that so much. I wish I could help with that. Oh my God. But like, going back to that point, yeah, that's actually why I did Path of the Beast manga, because like, there's no human ex furry stuff at all, and
well, especially with a Shota,
straight
Shota, like furry stuff. That's pretty unusually rare for that stuff.
Which is ironic, because like, it really shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't. You would think that the Japanese, with how based they are, that they would come up with more of this. And I mean, there is plenty of like furry on human, like male human and stuff in the doujins and stuff, but it's like very rare when it comes to like show loli. That's more unusual,
or even safe for work stuff. It's basically it's nearly non-existent.
It really is.
It's really strange to me. I in general, like, even if there was no romance, I would love to have more stories that have like humans and like anthros interacting with each other. But I would prefer romance. I think it makes things so much more interesting.
Oh,
it's
my god!
Like, you know, the interactions between species and cultures and stuff. It's just so interesting to me.
You're absolutely right. Like, that would be absolutely amazing to read. Hell, I want that now.
Could you imagine if you saw, you know how like they always show promotional art of like either a manga or an anime or a video game? Could you imagine if you saw like in the promotional art, you saw lolis, shotas, humans, then you had loli shota cubs, then you had anthros, then you had humans. I would instantly be on that show. I'd be like, oh damn, I'm ready to I'm gonna be so hyped to watch that show just from seeing that.
It sounds so interesting.
It does.
Yeah.
If you've ever watched Beastars or Zootopia, and like one of the most interesting parts of those shows is like the interactions between different species of animals or anthros.
That's why I love it. Yep.
And that's like the core of the premise, basically. It's like what would society be like if you had animals or anthros of like different species interacting with each other? And it's very interesting, but like throw humans into the mix into that, and it's like, Jesus.
And then throw lolis and shota humans into the mix. Oh, and you're really going crazy with it. And then it becomes amazing. Oh my god.
Yeah, there's so much like untapped potential.
No freaking kidding. Now I want to add humans to like my stories now, because there is a lot of potential for like the difference in cultures and whatnot. Like, oh my god, I want that now. I'm probably going to like do a lot of writing now.
For all we know, Undertale and Deltarune might have gotten it so popular because of that interesting dynamic of it being, well, it's only a few human characters or one, like in a Deltarune, it's only just the one character, Chris, who's like a human. And even then he's like, he has like blue skin color, but he's meant to be a human with the other monster creatures. But it would have been really cool if that had more humans in it. But I think just from having that alone made people be like, ooh, this is kind of interesting. It's a world where, you know, humans are interacting, like Chris is interacting with other like anthro creatures.
Yeah. And I think that was like one of the reasons why it was so successful, honestly. And it was part of the premise, of course, that, you know, was that in the Undertale, the first game, that human child who fell into the chasm or whatever, into the underworld with all the monsters. And I think a lot of people were into that premise. So I think you're exactly right that I think it advanced the campaign for human and anthro stories, though. And I think one interesting thing about Undertale is that it got kind of popular in Japan as well, because I've noticed like a pretty decent amount for like something from the West. Like, it's gotten a pretty decent amount of like Japanese fan art and stuff, which I think is very fascinating and cool.
I'm not surprised. They tend to cling on to really interesting concepts and whatnot. So, yeah. Like, I don't blame them for doing that.
It probably also helps that Undertale did get a Japanese translation. So that probably helped too.
I'm sure that helped a ton. And why is Chris blue? Did he get like mercury poisoned or something?
Ooh, can I explain that?
Oh, if you know the answer, then
I've actually played the games up to like the third chapter, so yeah, I can explain that. When Chris is blue, he's in like the other world. So
yes, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah,
I was going to suggest that Papyrus turned blue for some reason.
That's right. I forgot he does turn blue when he's in the other world, but when he's back in the normal world with all the other anthro monsters, because that's a totally normal world. I wish he was he's more like normal. Although I think, doesn't he have a similar skin color to Undertale? I can't remember. I haven't played it in a while. I need to though. For Frisk, yes.
Yeah. He did have a yellowish skin, similar to Frisk. He also wore a green shirt. Green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow.
Yeah. I did play chapter 2 of Deltarune, by the way, and man, was it fucking amazing.
It's great, right?
I can't wait for... Toby Fox is insane for making 500-plus songs for Deltarune. I don't know how the fuck he's going to do it, but he will. Because I know he's capable of doing it, and I'm just gonna that whole soundtrack is gonna blow my mind. I'm gonna love it.
Soundtrack already blows my mind, so you're just in line right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm gonna play it all the way from the beginning. Well, because I want to play from chapter 1, because I want to make sure I get the best possible ending because of all like the secret stuff in it. And I didn't play chapter 1, so I didn't get that initial first like secret part, and I need to do that.
I actually hadn't done any of the secrets, so yeah, good luck with that.
Oh, it's hard. It's like all the boss fights are difficult, but I that's what I want to get, though. But I won't do it with any strategy guide for the future chapters, though, for chapter 3 and 4. And I think Deltarune's going to have like 7 chapters or something. I don't know how the fuck he's going to get it done for like, I know he's gotten chapter 3 done, but... Because I listen to the new, or I will look at the newsletter, but I mean, I'm gonna be like an old man by the time Deltarune comes out in full. Like, damn,
old Hydro, be like, finally chapter 5, I can play my favorite game.
I mean, it is a game I'm willing to wait for because I know it's gonna be fantastic.
I'd blame you, same here.
So, Sony, what are some Lolly Show characters that you like, that you particularly like?
I have a list.
Oh,
oh, nice, good. All right, lay it on me.
So some of the characters that I do enjoy that I absolutely adore, Eevee Kid, for starters, and from Pokemon, and pretty much any character from Mega Man Battle Network, which is sorely underutilized. Like, artists, please, I want more Mega Man, like, showed up porn, damn it.
There was that Angel Shota, I think.
Oh yes, yeah, that's right.
So that was one of the Shotas, but there are other Shotas as well, right?
Yeah, like Lan, Mega Man, Iceman to an extent. There's so many potential characters that you could do so much lewd and taboo situations in. It's just the fact that they're underutilized is criminal.
Yeah.
And then there's my favorite hentai of all time, Futaboo. Have you ever heard of that?
I don't think I have.
I personally have not, no.
Wow. Oh, okay. I'm going to be interested in something then. Pretty much, it's basically like this a club at a high school where like these lolly characters with dicks have like this sex club And then a lolly with a vagina joins in, and you could pretty much imagine how that's going to go.
Was that made into a game?
No, I'm afraid not, but it did have its own manga, which I actually own, believe it or not, thanks to Faku.
Oh, very cool. Now here's the million-dollar question. Are the lollies with penises, do they have normal-size penises?
Unfortunately, no. It's not your kind of anime, unfortunately. I'm sorry, Hydro.
I have nothing against that, but I would like to see a more balanced distribution of it, you know, with character, with, you know, Fuda characters really, really need to have like proportional sized, please. Like not.
Oh, yeah,
mix it up.
Yeah,
mix it up.
more diversity would be great.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. That would be absolutely awesome. I would love them to have like realistic sizes as well, but I'll take what I can get.
But that does sound fun. I like the premise, though. The premise sounds very fun.
Oh, the premise is awesome. Like, I absolutely love it. Like, the president has, like, such a big dick to the point where, like, if it gets fully hard, she'll actually pass out from blood loss.
And that's part of her character humor.
Yeah, I love it.
What do you think of the Shotas in Pokemon? Are there any that you particularly like?
I know there was one in particular. If I had to guess, it would have to be this Pikachu kid.
Oh, yeah, he's a good one.
Oh, yes. Yep, that's a good one.
Got a soft spot for that one.
I mean, there's so many good ones. There's so many. That's one thing I will give Nintendo credit for, is they do an amazing job creating tons and tons of great Shota and Lolly characters, and just characters in general. The human characters they do an amazing job with.
Hell yeah, exactly.
Now, here's an interesting question. For older characters that you like, do you like seeing them younger as well? Like Amy Rose, for example, as a cub, is that something that you would enjoy seeing?
Oh my god, yes. Like, it's completely underutilized, so, like, how much, like, cub art is there? Like, there's not enough. I need more.
and I think they have actually officially done official art of Amy when she's like a cub, essentially. I think they have done that before, haven't they? I could have sworn they did. Or maybe it was just the Archie comics did Sonic Kids, which that one, I'm sure if you're a Cub fan of Sonic, you had to have known about that one, because that was a fun one where they did all the Sonic characters as like Lolly and Shota.
Unfortunately, I only saw the cover of it from the Sonic Collection video game, but I did like what I saw from the cover, I'll say that much.
Yeah, I know. I remember Amy looked particularly cute in the front cover. I remember
that.
She was
so adorable. God, I just... Gimme.
So was like all the Sonic characters were the same age as Tails, essentially?
No, they were even younger than that. Like, I think basically what they did was, is they made everybody as young as Tails, or maybe a little younger, and I think Tails was like basically like a baby, I think, if I recall correctly. It was really
basically
funny.
Basically like an amoeba.
Cream is just like a fetus.
I mean, I just remember it being very adorable looking and very, I mean, this was after my time when I was reading the comics, but I remember seeing it in the Sonic Mega Collection, the front cover, and that was very fun.
Yeah.
So what else is on the list?
Oh, I got a bunch more. Like, you ready for this one? Gura, obviously.
Perfect. Yep. Mm-hmm. That is our dream guest. If we ever were able to get a Lolly guest on our show, Gargoyle would be amazing.
Oh my god. That would probably be like the best episode ever, like, if that ever happens. Like, I honestly would love to see Gura's perspective on that, even if that is safe for work or whatever.
I feel like she definitely knows and utilizes that Lolly aspect. She knows about it for sure.
Yeah, she does. I just think that because she's, you know, contractually obligated under Hololive, she can't really go much further with it, of course.
Unfortunately, yeah.
And the algorithms and the different platforms and stuff, but
a large part of our audience must be Lollicons for sure.
Oh, they've got to. They have to be.
I don't watch a lot of her, but I've seen some outfits she has, and she is flat as a fucking board. So she's definitely Lolly.
I mean, I watch her, so I'm technically a fan.
Yep, you are one of the many Lollicons who likes Argura.
Woo!
All right, so what's next on the list?
Anya from Spy X Family, that one we already mentioned.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Always good.
Well, what about Becky? What are you a fan of Becky as well?
Oh, Becky, that's actually hilarious that you mentioned that, because like this is gonna be very personal to reveal, but like I role play with my best friend a lot. Like it's ridiculous. So, like I'll have to tell you after the show how many RPs I actually do with him at a time. but he pretty much introduced me with the idea of like Becky, and I never thought that she would actually be that hot until he introduced it to me. And I'm like, okay, actually, yeah, I can get down with that.
Did you watch the episode with Becky meeting Lloyd? That was by far the best episode of season two.
Oh no,
it might be
yet.
One of the best episodes ever. But
I really, really want it though. I hadn't gotten the time to like watch anything.
But what? All right, what's the next on the list?
Hilariously enough, Amy Rose.
Oh well, not surprising. Okay. Yeah,
Cream the Rabbit. I have a note here that says Furf. That's FURF. Makes amazing food at Cream Art. Like holy fucking shit.
Nice.
Yeah, and here's an obscure one that you probably haven't heard of. Have you ever heard of the DS game Drawn to Life?
I feel like I have, but I've never played it though.
So like, there were these little creatures called Raposa, and they basically kind of looked like cubs in a way, but they were so fucking cute. Like, oh my god, it's criminal how little porn there is of that.
Nice.
Yeah. There's also Undertale to an extent, but we already talked about that. Zelda's Young Link and Toon Link.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like I absolutely love the idea of Young Link.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Young Link kind of activated the neurons for a lot of Shotokans, like a lot.
Yeah.
No, yeah, in big the past. Time.
I know it did for me.
it helps that he wears shorts, so you get to see his legs.
Yeah, but it looks like he doesn't have anything underneath. Ooh, but in a way.
Easy access.
Yeah.
Yep.
The easiest of access.
But well, plus also in Ocarina of Time, he had those, you know, he had those interactions. Well, and on Majora's Mask, he had so many different like interactions with, you know, adult characters too, like adult female characters as well. Like the Great Fairy, and then there was that like protective guardian of Zelda, and then of course Majora's Mask has that super legendary moment where he's with that girl who hugs him. Tons of that great stuff.
He's got lollies too. He wants pee-pee. Yep.
Oh, and yeah, that's right, because Toon Link had that really cute, oh shit, what was her name? She's like a partial, oh, she kind of looks like a little bit of a bird.
Wasn't that Medley?
Yeah.
See, I never played that game, but I remember her being very cute and I liked her.
There's also Ruto. We can't forget her.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. She's a big one.
Yes. And I liked Ruto both as a lolly and as an adult too. There's like it looks great as both. That's what I really liked.
She aged gracefully. Puberty was blessing her.
Yes.
The other day, Hydra and I were talking about how great it would be to have a game with Young Link, but Zelda's an adult, and they were interacting with each other.
I would love it.
It reminds me of this speed run we watched of Ocarina of Time, where they skipped ahead as Young Link to like the ending of the game. So it was showing Young Link and Zelda and adult Zelda interacting with each other, and I think like the animation like lined up perfectly, where like Zelda was like patting Young Link's head.
Yeah, and she was like looking down at him too, I think, if I recall. So it was like it worked amazing. Like it looked like that's how it was intended to be.
That's how it was meant to be.
You hear that, Nintendo? Get on top of that. Back to the list. Yeah, here's another obscure couple of characters that are completely underutilized. Have you ever seen Wack Fu?
You know, Highware is a massive fan of Wack Fu. So I did watch like the first episode. And I know of the characters, yes.
Rest assured, Hydro, like you're seeing it at its weakest right now. It gets way better.
That's what Highware told me. Yeah, he's just like, oh, if you can just endure the first season, it gets much better.
Yeah, I'm gonna help him as well. Please endure. It gets way better, especially in the last season. Holy fucking shit!
Well, I remember seeing the French animators, because you know French people are pretty fucking based when they come to animation and Lolly and Shota and stuff, and just like horny stuff in general. And I remember they did actually draw like that one hot tub or sauna scene.
Yeah.
With the like, they actually drew everything. Like, they drew everything fully nude, but they like had to put disgusting mist and fog as censoring, and it was dumb. I wish they did not, but
I wish so too. I understand their perspective, but at the same time, I disagree with their perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you already drew it.
But yeah, Wakfu is an amazing series with a lot of young characters that is criminally underused. Like, the best examples of the art that I can find were done by Team Pervy, and their art is absolutely gorgeous. They draw the characters so well. Like, God, yes.
Oh, yeah, they do great art. Very cute characters. Cute designs of characters.
Highwear also draws them spot on.
Highwear does an amazing job, too.
Exactly like it looks in the show, which is why I liked ended up enjoying Wakfu because of Highwear's art.
Yeah. Both Team Pervy and Highwear are doing a great service for Wakfu Loli Show fans, because I don't see much art of those characters from other people.
We salute you too. You're doing God's work.
Yep.
Just a couple more left. Eri from My Hero Academia, the devil girl.
Oh yeah,
love her.
I only discovered her through porn, and oh my god, like, she is amazing.
there's a great set of art where like it's Fuda characters, but it's like it probably is, because I remember they fill like an entire barrel full of like their cum or whatever, and Eri has to like drink it all down and stuff. It is great. They like shove her head into it and stuff. All that stuff is
somehow this will help them defeat All for One.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will, Eri. That's the reason.
So the power yep. of cum.
That's right. Yep. You got to drink the cum. It'll make you stronger, I promise.
That'll restore your horn to its full power. Why do you think it's white? Why do you think your horn is white? That's why.
Put the two and two together. You'll figure it out. Start drinking. I got you a bendy strap.
Oh, they don't even do that. They just shove her mouth in there. And
oh, they do. Oh, that's hot. The art I was thinking of was like her being like, she had a dick and she was super sex crazed. I wish I could remember the artist, but like, she came so many times. She comes in a bear, she comes on the wall, she comes on the window, she fucking comes on her clothes. Nice. I think she shoots a load on the TV in the room.
That nice.
It was beautiful. I wish I can remember the artist. I'm sorry, artist. But here's another couple of characters that I think could potentially be shotified. Or lollified in this case, Animal Crossing characters such as Sasha and Isabel, because like they kind of look small in a way. May as well.
I think I have seen fan art of them lollified, and they do look amazing. They do look really good.
Would you send them to me? I want to see them.
If I can find it, it's more like me just to find seeing it and being like, oh, that looks great, and then I just move on.
I think one of the reasons why it works for those characters is that. For example, Isabel, in game, her model is flat. She ain't got a lot in the chest department, so it doesn't feel like so much of a departure to depict her as like a cub who's also flat.
Yeah, like there's a lot you can do with that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's also Roll from any Mega Man game. Honestly, like I know we mentioned Battle Network, but her classic look is also very good. At being a lolly.
I love her. I mean, yeah. She was the inspiration, part of the inspiration for Sam's design in IA1. I mean, she's just so good.
No way!
I love her look. And I love Roll Casket, too. I mean, all the depictions of Roll are amazing.
Hell yeah.
I'm almost wondering, do you have Nezuko as one of the lollies on your list, or no? From Demon Slayer?
Oh,
but probably not, but Nezuko, I feel like, would be a character, another lolly character you would also like.
I would.
She's very cute.
I'll put that on my list now. Nezuko.
Like Nezuko, I think, is how it's spelled.
Nezuko. Oh, okay. Oh, no, wait. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, she is one of my favorites as well. I completely forgot that.
I was right. I knew it.
I figured. Her on the list. What the fuck?
I don't know, but I figured she would be up there because she's very cute too. And she honestly, you know, because Semen Slayer is such a popular show, I noticed that a lot of fan art tends to age her up, and it irritates me that they don't have more Lolly depiction of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because the Lolly depiction of her is great.
Yeah, like, for God's sakes, you can have her small. She's a portable Lolly. Come on.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I think the reason why she wasn't on my list at first was because, like, I was going through my bookmarks on Barog, and I don't think I bookmarked any of her for some reason. I gotta get on top of that.
Do you have any future plans for, like, future projects?
I do know I have a lot of future writings that I'm going to be doing for story-wise. For example, I have a bunch more than I thought. Jesus. I was going to do one where Stony was going through some of her dreams. Another one where one of the characters would join the brothel. One where she actually learns about geckos. That's going to be for the Scalies. One where a guy joins the brothel. And, oh, this one's going to be my favorite. One where she goes to jail. she's going to start a whole prison orgy in that one.
Oh, nice.
Well, of course, it's
done. That's the jailbreak
she has.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And then there's the second part of the introduction for Stony, which I'm hoping to get on top of. Like, I just have the title for that one. Yeah, other than that, I do have a couple of audio ideas that I have that I'm working the script of. I'm planning on doing a listener ex trans mom kind of like audio drama ish, where, like, obviously, like, you're gonna have sex with the mom.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And yeah, I think I'm gonna have fun that. It's kind of similar to what Sunshine does with some of her audios, but, like, she's also one of my biggest inspirations as well.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, nice. She does an amazing job with her audios. Like, oh my god, I hope I get to the level of quality that she has for some of her stuff. The second audio project that I'm planning on working on, I haven't done the script yet for it yet, but I'm planning on doing a character for a friend of mine that's basically going to be a gooner girl that's, like, with a dick that, like, similar to the first audio that I mentioned, but, like, you're kind of like her sibling, I think, or a friend that's just bringing their lunch, and one thing leads to another, and sex.
Nice.
Yeah, that's some of the future products I'm working on.
Cool. And if people want to check out what you've already put out, how can they find you?
Oh, this will be exciting. So one of the first websites that I posted some of my stuff was on my Ink Money under Hentai Stone. That's my main username underneath all that stuff. You can also find some of my other stuff and all the art that I boost on Barug under H Stone. I was originally treating that as a safe work account, unfortunately, at the time, but that completely went out the window. And also, you can find some of the stories that I've written on Archive of Our Own under same username, Hentai Stone.
Sweet. So everyone who's interested in her stuff, be sure to check that out.
And then you also stream, correct?
Yes, I also stream on Pomf under the same username, Hentai Stone. And I have a lot of fun with it. I'm going through Insexual Awakenings right now. Yeah, and I'm having so much fun with it. And I'm also trying to play obscure games that I believe should get more attention, such as Battle Network.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what's your usual schedule for streaming? Do you have?
Yes, I do. As of now, my normal schedule time is every Tuesday, 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, and Thursday, 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time.
Sweet.
And we wish you luck on all your future projects. It sounds like you have a lot lined up, which is great. You know, as a creative person, you always want to have stuff that you want to work on and you know, get out there for both yourself and, you know, the people who are getting more and more interested in your stuff. And hopefully even more people will be interested in reading your stories and watching you stream and listening to your voice work.
I'm really hoping some of them read the stories, because like I desperately need feedback on that. I need to know if I'm doing good or not.
And thank you so much for being on.
Yes, and thank you for having me. It was an absolutely fun time, and I'm really, really happy that I finally got to do this. Like, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, we're glad to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you.